Cheers Cast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
All right. What a birthday, huh? A free beer, a Celtics jacket from Kevin McHale, and Sammy wiping out my bar tab.
Hey, whoa. I didn't say anything about wiping out a bar tab.
Well, happy birthday to me. You want to go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and back at the bar stool again is an actor whose voice you can hear at WRBH.org, where he reads for the blind, just because he's a better person than all of you jerks listening to this show. Please welcome back Mr. Langston Fishburne. What's up, man?
Not much, Ryan. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming back. We got a fun episode this time. We are up to season 10, episode 8, Where Have All the Floorboards Gone? This one written by Ken Levine and David Isaacs. It was directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, November 7th, 1991. It's Norm's birthday, and the guys at Cheers get him a Boston Celtics jacket hand-delivered by returning guest star and Hall of Fame player Kevin McHale. While at the bar, Kevin gets pulled into Norm and Cliff's debate about how many bolts are in the parquet floor at Boston Garden. Despite Carla's attempt to save him, Kevin becomes obsessed with the inane bit of trivia. He is so consumed by the floor bolts that it's costing him on the court and at home with his wife. To save Kevin from himself, Sam, Norm, Cliff, and Woody sneak into the garden at night to count the bolts themselves. Woody unscrews some bolts to pull up the floorboard to see the ice underneath the floor where the Bruins skate. But when security forces the guys to run away, Woody doesn't have time to screw the floorboards back into place. During the next game, Kevin trips over the loose floorboard and injures himself. In the locker room, the guys admit responsibility for the floorboard, but still, Kevin will not rest until he finds out how many bolts are in the floor, so all five of them spend the night counting bolts. In the meantime, Lilith changes her hairstyle, and Frasier can't stop laughing at her.
Yeah, that's where we're at.
Big picture, what did you think about this one?
So I really enjoyed everything that they were doing with Kevin McHale. I loved seeing how this giant of a man dwarfs everybody in the bar, but immediately becomes part of it. Just so fast. Carla's trying to ward him off. Just get out. Just go. Right. And that was really lovely. The Frasier Lilith stuff had some moments that were fun, but a lot of it was more mean-spirited than it needed to be. And then we've seen Frasier behave in a lot of previous episodes.
There was something about it. I was like, the concept for this seems great,
yeah.
But something about the execution wasn't working. Might be mean-spirited, might be a little bit more of the hook of it.
It's great as a sitcom goes because there are so many things that you just have to wash your hands of the logic and say, this works because this is the world we're in.
Mm-hmm.
But then, again, we'll get to it later with him and Rebecca to a degree, just getting very silly.
Yeah.
Like, unbelievably so.
And a kind of recurring thing for this season that's come up a couple of times is, I mean, Cheers never had necessarily the strictest continuity for, you know, a sitcom in the 80s and 90s. But this season, it seems like I think it was different executive producers kind of like running some of the day-to-day episodes and writing. And it just seemed like some of the characterization was either a little bit off or they were playing a little bit looser with some of that, because a whole thing about this episode, not just like the beginning, but the way we see Norm throughout this episode is his love of the Boston Celtics and how gaga he is over meeting Kevin McHale and being starstruck just being on the floor of the garden. We have never seen this from Norm. He's always been acknowledged as a Boston sports fan, but he's not like, he's never shown that much emotion about anything.
Not at all. And
a sports fan.
I mean, I know continuity isn't huge for the writers and all of that, but he's mentioning going to the garden with his dad and hearing him order beer after beer. And it's like, but Norm's from Chicago, I thought.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, that was a thing, yes.
He moved to Boston.
But he's also just not sentimental. Like, no. It just seemed like such a... Yeah, and something else about Kevin, but we'll kind of get into that as we go through. The teaser for this episode, we've got another outdoors teaser. I assume they just filmed a ton of these, like all at once. They got a shot. They just wrote all of these in advance and went to Boston, filmed it outside on Beacon. Because this one, Frasier is parking his car right on the street, right in front of Cheers. Like, I don't know how he found this parking spot.
I don't think
that only works when you've got a crew blocking off the streets.
They do. If you pay attention, you can. It's one of my favorite things to do is you can catch the reflection of a cameraman in the glass. Yeah, right. By the mirror on his car when he closes the door, and the camera's right there.
Nice.
And you can see it turn to get the other angle for all of his close-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy in a baseball cap, sunglasses, with the whole rig.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah. Just, nice. I don't know why, it makes me so happy.
Well, so the premise for this one is he's pulling up, he's locking the car, and he's walking in, and the car's alarm goes off, which I'm trying to, like, was a car alarm a novelty in 1991? Like, it seems like it was, like, this seems like a status thing. Like, Frasier has a car with a car alarm that he can deactivate with a fob, with a push of a button. That seems like a thing, like a snobby, you know, elite Frasier thing.
I've got LoJack. Yeah, and the club.
So the alarm goes off, so he deactivates it, and he starts heading back towards the bar. It goes off again, and he stops, kind of frustrating, turns it off, and it happens one more time. He's just getting angry and angry, and he starts to kind of head down the stairs, and camera pulls up enough that we see crouched down by the front of the car. Norman Cliff have crawled over there and are just flipping the door handle, like they're trying to steal the car to activate the alarm, while Frasier can't see him because he's on the other side. And Norm has his beer in his hand. He couldn't do this without taking his beer out on the street. Like, it's a sitcom after all. They're like, Norm, you can't do that.
You can't sit in the street. That's not a parking spot. How did they get around Frasier somehow?
Never mind how narrow the streets are. If he's got street parking and they're sitting on that side of the car, they're gonna be trucks running over. But yeah, it's a funny gag because they set off the alarm one more time and Frasier comes running up the stairs from like Oscar. He'd even like gotten down to the door and he comes running back up to deactivate it. It's a funny little gag. It's one of those that, like, I think there's one line of dialogue when Cliffy's just like, this never gets old. So
yeah, again, perfect sitcom. We're going to wash our hands of how this makes sense.
when we come back from the opening credits, Woody is asking Frasier for help. It's the third anniversary that he's been dating Kelly now. And Woody got her, he's like, this rinky keychain or something. But she got him this fancy $300 camera. And he's got this dilemma. And Frasier's like, no problem. Frasier anticipates the problem. And if you've been watching the show, you can anticipate what's going to happen after that, because Frasier's going to jump to the wrong conclusion. But Frasier is like, he tells Woody not to feel guilty that her gift was much more expensive because she comes from a lot of wealth. And she describes Woody as an unsophisticated laborer with nary a two pennies put together. And he's like, relations like this, they rarely work as long as 3 years. So you just be happy you're with her now. And he's like, all I needed to help was working the automatic flash, but now I'm going to cry.
It's such a great encapsulation of their relationship, because we see this happen so many times again and again. Woody and Frasier back and forth. And they're a great double act. And it's nice that we get to have this. Because with Coach, it could have been this sort of, aw shucks, I don't quite get what's going on with anybody. And we would have lost some of what made Frasier's presence in the bar special.
Right.
You know, getting them to grow together is so fantastic at this point in the series.
Yeah, and because there's so many ways. I mean, Frasier can be patronizing, and then it can just, there will be an ironic twist that just flips it back on Frasier's head. And it speaks to how the strength of these characters and these actors and how wonderful they are. Lilith comes up to Frasier that she needs to leave. She needs to go get her picture taken for a new photo ID badge for her lab. And Rebecca just kind of randomly kind of asked her if she's going to get her hair done for that. And why would I? And Carla makes a change, like, get the tension on that bun checked. And she's like, if that baby goes, we're all dead or something. And Lilith shoots back at her. That hardly seems just, coming from someone whose hair has never met a greasy pot it couldn't scrub clean. And Carla steps up to her, like she's ready to go at it.
So good, and yet so strange. I feel like that's something Carla would appreciate.
Yeah. She, like, you'd think she'd be like, hey, nice one, good job. Mm-hmm. But Frasier jumps in to defuse it. He's like, there's no need to fight, no matter how on the nose either of you might have been.
And then his eyes.
Lilith asks Frasier if he thinks she should change her hair. And we get this little sequence where Frasier kind of excuses himself, like, in real time to go confer with the guys. And it's like, oh, this is this thing, this kind of cliche dilemma. The woman has asked me to weigh in on her appearance. It's like, well, there's no right answer. How do I avoid this? And it's like, yeah, just, and he's like, I think you should do what makes you happy. She's like, you're a coward. Just give me a decision. And he has to kind of like come down one way or another. And he keeps like going back to the group, and I see what they're going. I don't know how much of this is retroactive on my part as a viewer, but this feels kind of like a tired gag.
Yeah.
Crowdsourcing so he can get his thoughts on this dilemma that we kind of understand, but it's, and maybe, I don't know, 35 years ago, it didn't feel that way, but it's kind of like, it was a little bit beneath them.
A little, and the staging of it, it's very theatrical. It is mm-hmm. very much in that idea of, in a play, I'm going to suddenly address the audience, but ignore right. what's happening behind me. This is you and I connecting, and then he's back into the action. And right. Cheers, again, it is a play. A lot of the time, you can see it as a play, you can hear it as a radio show. It works mm-hmm. because the writing is so solid, but with something that's this physical, when he has these moments, you're like, okay, but like, shouldn't you be doing something? You're going to the bar. You mm-hmm. can order a drink, and it seems right. less weird for you to take your time and collect your thoughts, and then you come back to her and respond, oh, wait, this isn't mine. Let me go back again and again address this, and just, it feels like there's something missing.
Yeah. And if I mean, it culminates where he's like, yes, I do think you should, like, change your hair. It'll be good for you. And, of course, she's like, why? Because you've always hated my appearance. And he's like, just a second, I mean, one more time. And he kind of steps away, and he's like, taxi! And he just starts to run out the door, and she's kind of like going after him. It's over the top, but I kind of like that resolution to it. Like, I was like, where else are they going to go with this? He's just going to run away. And I was like, okay. Cowardly We've retreat seems... Before. Yeah. that doesn't seem terribly out of character. But...
No, he's afraid of his wife.
Yeah. And then Norm comes in, we get the Norm, and it's his birthday, so he says, give me a beer, stick a candle in it, and I'll blow out my liver. And, you know, he's like, how are you going to celebrate? He's like, he just wants the day to come and go like any other day. And Rebecca's like, I think you can pull that off.
Yes, very Norm.
So they ask, what does he want more than anything? Because the guy's chipped in to get him a birthday present, and he wants a beer. Or, like, yeah, no, they're asking, he's, like, downing the first beer, almost like a shot, and puts it down, mm-hmm. just slides it. He's like, what I want more than anything is another beer. And they're like, close your eyes, and they bring it to him, and it's got a bow on it. He's got another beer with a bow on it and everything. And he does, like, the whole, oh, wow, what is it? What could it be? And he takes the bow. It's a beer!
Perfect.
Yep.
Norm knows everybody. Everybody knows Norm.
Right. But Sam says he got Norm another present. And he, like, takes him back to the, he's walking him over towards the office, and Norm says, a keg and a snorkel or something like that. Like,
yes. which I think he's used as, like, one of his Normisms walking in before.
Right. yeah, I think so. But Sam is like, we know how much you like the Boston Celtics. I'm like, okay.
Sure,
he likes all the Boston sports teams. Mm-hmm. And then he opens the door, and as you pointed out, giant, like, man, Kevin McHale steps out, has to actually duck his head mm-hmm. to get through the door frame to stand over them. Yeah, and like stars in his eyes, Norm is just like, oh, this is incredible. He's getting him, and Kevin presents him with his own Celtics jacket. Now, for one thing, it's really cool that they got a then current Boston Celtics player
yes.
to come on the show. The thing is, this is Kevin's second time on the show.
Yes, it is.
And the previous time, Kevin played basketball with them. Norm played basketball with Kevin McHale last season.
Yeah.
So it's like, I would think getting a jacket is a little bit less special than actually bounce passing him while he goes up for a layup or a dunk or something.
from this guy you kind of know.
Right. And then the other thing is, like, again, like, this is one of those things where it only seems weird when you scrutinize it for a podcast, but how long was Kevin in that office just waiting for them? Because there's no break between all the stuff that we got with, like, Woody and Frasier and Lilith's hair to Norm coming in. Like, he was in there for 5 minutes at least in the time of the show.
Yeah, and like, he's got a game that thing. What's he doing?
Yeah, he's got other stuff today. So I was just kind of wondering, like, I mean, if there were other kind of legendary players that were concurrent at the time that could have been, like, obviously Larry Bird, if they had had Larry Bird. Right. I mean, but that would have been a huge deal. But
that would
have
been the show.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have been the episode.
The other one, Robert Parrish, was, you know, a Hall of Famer. He was still on the team that season. That might have been his last season.
Mm.
I had one other player on the team that I had to shout out, Kenny Battle, who was not a well-known player, but I had to mention him because he graduated from Northern Illinois University, which is in my hometown of DeKalb, Illinois. So, but he was only in the NBA for 5 or 6 seasons.
But somebody like that would have made great sense for Norm. Hey, man, right. You're doing the thing that I do here professionally. I love it.
Yeah.
You're on the team, but you're not the most important person. You're the heart of the team.
And then, like, they present Norm with the jacket, and Woody's going to take a picture of Norm and Kevin together. The flash doesn't go off. He's kind of messing around with it. He asks Sam for help. And, of course, the flash goes off right in Sam's eyes, and Sam is dropping glasses, and you just hear the shot.
Have we ever seen Sam try and hold that many glasses before?
That was weird. He's got, like, 2 or 3 in each hand that they're all just, like, dropping. Norm is like, he's so thrilled about his birthday. He got a free beer. He got a Celtics jacket from Kevin McHale. Sam is wiping out his bar tab. And Sam's like, whoa, 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 whoa. I never said I'm going to do that. And Norm's like, well, happy birthday to me.
It's worth a try, Norm. It's always worth a try.
And Kevin goes, say, Sam, I did the favor for you. Where's the autographed Red Sox baseball you promised me? And Sam's like, hang on, I got it over here. And Sam goes to the other side, and we see old Phil, the old guy, forging names on this baseball. And Sam was like, are you almost done? He goes, how many G's in Wade Boggs? And Sam is like, two. And Phil's like, is that all? It doesn't look right. And I'm like,
it doesn't.
You think there's more than 2 G's in Boggs?
It's in cursive, you know.
Yeah.
Two just looks a little short.
And it's such a weird little moment that it's almost my home run for the episode. It's almost my favorite bit, just because out of nowhere it's just going. It's like, yeah, Sam can't get a real autographed Red Sox from his old, like, playmate. He's got to get Phil forge these names,
and Phil can forge autographs. That's a whole other thing we're not going to talk about. But Phil has this in his wheelhouse. This is part of who he is. Sure.
Right. But clearly not familiar enough with the players that he even knows how they spell their name.
No.
And a very special little moment between friends. Cliff says that he got Norm a present too. He went to the library. He was looking up the history of birthdays. He found all of these fascinating facts about the long traditions and things like that. So much information, but he's not going to share it with Norm. And that's like, Norm could kiss him for that. He's like, that's the best thing you could have given me. It's keeping that to yourself.
We've gotten to that point where the characters are so established that you know Cliff has something.
Yes.
And their friendship is so strong, I'm not bringing it up. I am going to bring up, though, so you said air date's November 7th. George Wendt's actual birthday was October 17th. There was an episode of Cheers that aired on his birthday that year. But it wasn't this one, because this is supposed to take place during the NBA season, which began in that year, November 1st. So part of me wonders if they had two different scripts or two different ideas where, hey, it's Norm's birthday. What do we do? Let's make it George's actual birthday episode. That could be fun. And they just had for timing to mash them together.
And this is where Norm kind of brings up the thing you mentioned earlier, where he kind of reminiscing about his fond childhood memories of going to Boston Garden, watching his dad order beer after beer after beer, thinking, someday. Mm-hmm. And again, that's his memory. Not going there to watch the game, but going there to watch his dad order beers from the vendor.
He's consistent.
Yeah. Cliff mentions the garden's historically famous parquet floor. He says it's comprised of 240... individual squares held down by 2,860 bolts. Norm says that's wrong. It's 2,880 bolts. And he got that info from a guy who works on the floor. But Cliff insists that no, his information, his source is unimpeachable. It's like, yep. Who is that source? My ma.
I mean, between those two, I'm inclined to believe Ma Clavin.
Right. So they ask Kevin, and he has no idea how many bolts are in the floor. He's never even thought about it, but he's like, eh, could be kind of a fun bit of trivia. And Carla goes rushing up. She's like, stop, stop. And she tells Kevin to just run away. She's like, do not. And she's like, whisking him towards the door. She's like, do not get caught up in these gang's discussions. You'll end up just like them. They never leave And she's got this moment. She's like, I once knew a guy who was a respected psychiatrist. It's too late for him now.
We all knew that guy once.
We don't think. It goes back to the thing I've pointed out for 10 seasons now, is the gravity well of Cheers, that just the longer you stay in there, it pulls everybody down. And Kevin is only there for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And we see him getting sucked in.
You got it. You have a job, man.
Yeah. He's like, yeah. I've got a game. I've got to go. So he says goodbye to everybody. He tips out the door, and it barely closes when he comes rushing back. He's like, you know, if you just count the number of bolts per square and then multiply that by the number of squares, you could find that out. That is probably the easiest mathematical way to do it. I don't know why they don't think of that.
Again, sitcom logic. You know, you're right. We're not going to worry about that.
Right.
We're going to count.
So later on, the guys are watching the Celtics game, and here Lilith comes in with her hair wrapped in a scarf, so we don't see like the full thing. Mm-hmm. And she says she just came back from the beauty parlor and had them do something really radical, and she wants to show Frazier and get his opinion, and she takes it off, and it is the biggest perm. Like, she calls it a perm. I think it looks more like an afro. Like, I'm like, that's like 70s funkadelic afro. Like, that,
yeah, it's incredible.
It's like, it's, and Frazier just stunned silence to the point where he has to like circle her, like walking around her to look at it from every angle. And she's like, what do you think? And he just starts laughing, and he can't keep a straight face. And she's like, that hurts my feelings. And he's like, I'm sorry, but he can't stop. So she runs away. And he chases her to the door. He gets to she's on her way up the stairs, and he stops. He's like, please stop, turn around. And she turns around, and he starts laughing again. And she goes. And
I get the first time he laughs, right. And even the second time. The running after she's made it clear her feelings are hurt.
Yeah.
Understand.
I just, like, the reveal, the reveal of her hair is so extreme, but the gags that follow it from this point with the subplot all feel comparatively lazy.
Yeah.
You couldn't have thought of something else. It's so extreme that there almost aren't any like verbal jokes and everything. It's just like sort of sight gags and emotional responses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like I say, that when she's on the stairs and he goes to her, that last laugh, it feels mean-spirited.
Yeah.
Because it's a drastic change. But she doesn't look bad. She just looks different.
Yeah. It's
especially for that character.
Right. Yes, it's so extremely different. Back to the guys watching the game, the Celtics lose. They say McHale played really poorly, even though by the final score they lost, but they scored 100. They scored 100 points. But they say McHale had a really bad game. And they say he was distracted, like he was looking at the floor the whole time. And they're like, you don't think he was counting floorboards, do you? And we get this little moment, a post-game little shot of a reporter on the floor. And the guy's name is Glenn Ordway. He was a real Boston sports radio guy and a color commentary. He was the color announcer during a lot of their games for a while. So he was a real sports figure, just like Kevin McHale. But they do like a little scene, like after the game, he's like on the floor, you know, doing like post-game interview. And like IMDb trivia kind of pointed this out, that like if you look at it, the stands are almost empty. Like, it's like the game ended 2 minutes ago, there's nobody there. But he's like I think I can get an interview with Kevin McHale, he's coming right by here. He's like, Kevin, can I talk to you? And you just see Kevin walking right by him, counting on the floor. Mm-hmm. Like 240, 241, 242. And it's kind of a funny gag. They're like, oh my God, this is what we've done to these guys. But the other little goof or little hang up, but they've done this twice now, is he's wearing a green jersey. He's wearing his green uniform.
Right.
Which is the Celtics away jersey, away uniform.
Hmm.
But they're playing at the Garden. It's a home game.
And they shot at the Garden.
Yes, yeah. But the thing is, last season, when Sam went back to pitch against this Yankees player, he Dutch Kincaid, they brought Sam back so he could throw like one more pitch so this guy could score like a home run as his farewell for the Yankees or something. And in that one, it was at Yankee Stadium. Like, Sam went to pitch at Yankee Stadium in his Red Sox uniform because the Sox were playing that day, but they were wearing their home uniforms. So it was like, this must be a conscious choice. Like, the creators thought, like, these are more recognizable uniforms. Yeah. It's easier to see. They're like more brightly colored. The color green on the uniform is more striking. It's more visually like appealing, but it's just kind of weird that like now this is twice, two different sports, that the team is wearing the wrong jersey when we kind of focus on them.
That is such an oddity. You're right. It must just be that, hey, these are the iconic colors. This is what people will know, even if they aren't necessarily sports fans, but
yeah. Later on, Kevin calls Cheers from home, and he's lying in bed with his wife. Now, the woman who will actually gets a couple of lines, we see her, she is played by Lynn McHale, his actual wife.
So love that.
They get her in the show. So he's calling them from Cheers, and they're like, yeah, he had a rough night. And Sam's like, yeah, you really stunk it up out there. And Kevin's like, hey, I saw you pitch. You're not entitled to an opinion. And as much as earlier when I was kind of saying like they could have gotten another player because like why did they bring him back and why have Norm Starstruck, like I remember in the previous time he appeared, Kevin McHale was my MVP for that episode, that other like Bar Wars episode, because he's really good. And I think part of it is just like the trash talk, like he knew how to do it. Like he's good at like insulting the other guy. He's just got a great presence about him, and he's got good comic timing, which it's hard to expect that from like celebrity guest stars. But Cheers really excelled at it. When they had like, you know, like non-acting professional guest stars, a lot of times they got really great material that they made it work.
Yeah, his timing is really solid. Never mind for a celebrity, it's hard to find actors with good comic timing. It's just hard, period.
Yeah, good point. But Kevin is so focused, he's obsessed with these bolts. And he's called people all over town, and he can't get a credible answer. And Carlos, like, shouting on the phone, telling him to get help. And Sam says, you got to be careful. Bar trivia will eat you up. Kevin's wife, Lillian, she's like, who are you on the phone with? And he's like, it's just the guys at Cheers. And she rips the phone cord out of the wall.
She knows about Cheers. He's been here before.
Exactly.
You know, and Sam picks up and tells it's Kevin McHale, because of course there's another Kevin, but it's not unusual that he would call the bar.
Right. Yeah, it's almost a little bit of a meta joke where he's like, yeah, she knows what Cheers is. She knows what Cheers represents. Like, later on, Lilith is back at the bar with her big hair, and she's talking to Rebecca, and Rebecca's just kind of leaning on the bar with her hand on her chin. You know she's kind of like gritting and holding back something, just like that, by the way she's saying, like, it almost looks like she's trying not to throw up or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like she's trying to pretend like she's really sober. And Lilith is saying that, you know, she tried talking to Frazier at home, but when he looked at her, he laughed so hard that cappuccino ran out of his nose. Which,
ouch.
Yeah, that was my thoughts. Like,
first thought I had, oh man, ow.
And Lilith asks if Rebecca thinks her hair makes her look ridiculous, and says, no, it's a welcome change. And after Lilith leaves, Carla asks how she kept a straight face, and Rebecca holds up her free hand that was underneath the bar that we didn't see, and she's got a mouse trap on her fingers.
Yeah, like, flat.
Yeah.
There's so much you can do with that, especially since Carla's so tiny, and if you're just going for physical pain is getting me through this, Carla's happy to help. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But a mousetrap, it's so slapstick, it's weird.
Kevin McHale comes back into the bar. He says he couldn't sleep. And he's like, they're like, you've got a game tomorrow. He doesn't care, so he's already losing. He's already throwing. They're getting worried now. And he's got blueprints to the Garden. And it's like, how did you get blueprints? And he's like, I know somebody down at City Hall. And he kind of like taps Norm. He's like, kind of a boss, kind of a sports legend in this town. Like, like the self-awareness there was kind of... just quick to point out that these are the blueprints for the new stadium, TD Garden, which would be built in a couple of years after this. They started construction in 1993, opened in 1995. And Cliff knows that they're different buildings and different blueprints because of the placement of the mailboxes on the street.
Of course.
So Kevin is upset that he got the wrong plans, and he's like, give me the phone. I'll see if the mayor is still up. And they're like, dude, no, you can't get it. It's like, he's going to throw away his job. He's going to get in trouble with the mayor. Like, he's going to ruin his reputation all because of these guys at Cheers. Like, this is what it's doing to him. And he's like, I can't, nothing's going to stop me from finding this out. The door opens and his wife walks back in, and she's like, Kevin, he's like, gotta go, guys. And he runs out to go with her. And, and Carla calls the guys vampires, big-butted, do-nothing vampires.
Tame by Carla standards, but very much in character.
Right. Sam says that she's overreacting, and she's like, well, yeah, today it's just bolts on the floor. Tomorrow they'll get Kevin obsessed with if the Brady Bunch crashed a plane in the Andes, who would eat who first? And they can joke about it like this. This moment. This is one of those things where, like, just it's so out of nowhere and it's so shocking, but also, like, so perfect because the setup is just this nonsensical, hypothetical situation. If the Brady Bunch was forced into cannibalism by circumstance, well, who would eat who first? And piping up, not even part of the conversation, but just from the back, Woody pops up. It's like, well, they'd probably eat the maid first because she ain't kin.
Yes. Oh, Woody being so dark.
It's pretty, there's a pragmatism to it, the way you understand the logic, but it also sounds so sociopathic when you hear it spoken. Like he actually had a logic behind that. It's like, well, she's not blood related, so obviously they would kill her first.
And of course he did. With all the family members he's seen maimed, this is a genuine concern, I guess. We're stranded. What do we do now?
Right. And Cliff is like, well, if they were smart, they would ask her how to prepare herself before they ate her.
Perfect bar talk. Just like with the first episode, what's the sweatiest movie?
Yes.
Who do you eat first? Yeah. Just none of this matters. What are we doing here?
So the guys, they have to go to the garden and count the bolts themselves so they can save Kevin from himself. They're saying, like, yeah, we can get it. And Cliff, he says he can help them out because he's got this Swiss Army knife. And he's like, every soldier in the Swiss Army has one of these. That's why no one messes with Switzerland.
Sure.
Yeah. So later, we shoot inside Boston Garden. Like, they get the lights on and everything. The guys, the four of them are on the floor. It's all empty. And, like, Norm is like, every piece of this place is sacred and holy to him. And he wants to rip a seat off the floor and throw it in the back of his car. Just kind of own a piece of that. Which, that's a funny gag, but it sounds like, okay, because Norm is still wearing the jacket, like, throughout this whole thing. He's, like, still wearing the Celtics jacket. Like, this is a big deal for him.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the same day, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Busy day.
Yeah, so they're walking around, and Woody asks Cliff, like, how do the Bruins play ice hockey in the same building? And Cliff is like, the ice is underneath the floor. And he's like, really, underneath here? He's like, yeah. And he hands him Swiss Army knife. He takes the screw out and it's like, take out some of these bolts and you can see it underneath the floorboards. So while Woody is doing that, Norm comes in. He's got a basketball. They're like, where'd you get that? He's like, yeah, it's been in the trunk of my car since the last time I went to the gym. It's like, you want to, like, shoot around, play on the garden like the actual players do? And they're like, yeah. So Sam and Norm start to run, and Norm, you can't say he dribbles the ball. He throws it to the ground where it just stops with a thud and echoes kind of throughout the whole stadium, and it just doesn't move anywhere, completely flat. And Sam is like, how long has this been in your car? And he's like, how long has it been since the last time you went to a gym? And he's like, I don't know, the one that they used to be near Cheers. And he's like, there's no gym near Cheers. Like, well, they tore it down. They put up a bookstore. And Cliff is like, there's no bookstore next to Cheers. He's like, they tore that one down and put up the bank. Sam is like, the bank has been there as long as I've owned Cheers. And Norm's like, well, there you go.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe he is from Boston and Chicago's just a fever dream.
Woody lifts up the board and they're checking out that there's plywood underneath the Parquet Square. And then they have to get through that to get to the ice. And then Cliff is like, that's good. I can use my saw on the Swiss Army knife. And then they hear something like a commotion from over there. They're like, security's coming. We got to run. So they all kind of like rush in. Like Woody puts the floorboard down. And again, Norm has this kind of like wistful thing, like before they pull him out, where he's just kind of like looking at it. He's like, this is the greatest day of my life. And it's like, this is not Norm. Like,
no.
And that's not even like a play on words, like not the norm of like what's normal. It's like, it's just,
it isn't
just like, yeah, like this could have been a different character that we don't see, but it's.
It would have made more sense for this to be Cliff.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. Like it's.
Sure.
Nothing about it is off. Like every part of it is still funny and enjoyable. It feels like an alternate universe Norm kind of stepped in.
Yeah.
There's a multiversal Norm who does actually have emotions about things. He does care.
He's invested in Boston sports.
Right.
And Swiss Army knives can remove bolts.
Right. And the next day or later on, Lilith comes back to the bar. She's waiting to meet Frasier. He comes in. He's wearing his overcoat. He's got his hands in the jacket pockets, noticeably. And he apologizes for his behavior. It was unconscionable. And he loves her. He loves her hair. And she'll always be beautiful to him. And she thanks him. She hugs him. And he wraps his arms around her. And we see that he's got a mouse trap on each of his hands, just like Rebecca. And that's what he needed to keep a straight face. I think we've said all we need to say about this plot line. So.
That said, his apology, the way he delivers all of that is really, really touching and so sweet.
Yeah, I mean, Kelsey Grammer was good.
He was great in that moment, and yeah, I wish that had been the end of it.
Yeah. The guys are watching the Celtics play, and he's like, Sam says Kevin doesn't have to think about the boards anymore because he told them how many are there. Like, how do you know? We didn't get a chance to count. He's like, I just made up a number. He's never going to know. And Woody kind of, he's like, Sam, suppose a guy took a few bolts out of a floorboard in a very important building, but he got spooked by security and ran away and didn't have a chance to put the bolts back in. Sam's like, you didn't screw the bolts back in the floor? Woody's like, I knew you would have guessed it was me. I should have tried to trick you. So they're like, well, you know, it's no big deal. Like, they've got a whole ground crew that would make sure that the bolt is the floor is fine. There's not going to be any problems to that. And naturally, 1 second later, we hear the announcer calling the game that Kevin is dribbling and he trips. Whoa, he trips. He goes down. And he tripped over the floorboard. That hurt just to watch or something like that. So the guys are freaking out and they're like, oh, now it's our responsibility. We hurt Kevin. What he's saying, that it's his fault for taking out the bolts. And Norm's like, no, it's his fault for starting the whole conversation. Sam is like, it was my idea to go to the garden that night. Cliff is like, well, it was my idea to bring the Swiss Army knife and take it out. And Woody's like, no, I'm the one who forgot to put the bolts back. And Cliff is like, he's right, you know?
Yep.
<It's>
like, we don't have to feel guilty.
Yeah.
Woody's to blame.
Yeah. They each took their turn, but they're like, yeah, somebody else. He's like, Woody can take the fall for this. So later on, we're in the locker room now at the garden, and they're like, yeah, it's our fault. And he's like, no, it was my stupid fault. And it was just a freak. They're like, no, we came here to count the bolts, and we actually took these out. And he's like, so it is your fault, really? And he just has this line. He's like, that figures. With you guys, that really figures.
And oh,
like,
yeah.
There's some honesty to that joke. So he's like, well, at least now I know how many bolts are there, so I can put that to rest. And Sam's like, we actually have another confession to make.
Well, yeah, this was my runner-up.
Yeah.
Sam and him going back and forth. Yeah. Actually.
Yeah. He's like, I have to know. It's like, what does it matter? It's like you had a great game. It's like, but what about the next game? The game after that. So cut to back on the floor. Empty, but now it's the five of them, and Kevin's got like a cane, like a half crutch or something like that. And Norm has an adding machine from his time as an accountant, and they're just going through one by one, counting up there. And Kevin's like, wait, I already counted that one. You just see this look of kind of frustration. Norm tears the receipt off and just starts over again from one, two, and they go.
Well, if he was enamored with Kevin McHale, that's over now.
Yeah.
Also, another thing that doesn't matter, we get an exterior shot of the tea. I don't think that's been on the show before. When we're going to see Kevin at the garden after he hurts himself during the game, They do an exterior shot of the garden, and the tea rolls by.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. I'll have to rewatch it and check that.
I was like, huh, nice. You never see this.
Yeah, the subplot, I think, had a lot of promise, but it was just weakly executed.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little bit distracted by Norm, but that's just, I mean, that's a problem that comes if you've been obsessively watching the show for 10 years and scrutinizing it to the degree I have. And like, if I can separate myself from that, like, nothing Norm did was wrong. There was no off note other than it just seemed like a little bit different for his character, but it still, it was funny. Everything with Kevin was great. Like, there was a lot of joy in this episode. So overall, I did like this episode a lot. Yeah,
it's a fun little fluffy episode. And if you had been watching when all of this aired, not religiously, but you caught an episode or two of Cheers every few months, this would make perfect sense. Like, yeah, sure, it's a Boston place. He's a Boston guy. Of course, he's about these things. Right. Maybe you didn't see the other Kevin McHale episode. So even him being awestruck is perfect sense.
Right. So for Norm's tab, he had 7 beers this episode, which brings his total up to 977. I didn't divide the number. I didn't multiply how many he had this episode by how many episodes we've had. Should have done that math. However, one of those 7 was the birthday gift, which I'm sure they did not charge him for. Right. So for the credit tally that I've been keeping, so he still has a credit of 378 beers that will continue. So for the employee of the week, I gave it to Kevin again. Whenever you have a guest star that's sort of does more than you would expect a celebrity guest star to do, I like to record those. And I actually thought, like, the way he just gets pulled in so quickly, where if he was on the show 5 more times, he just would have been at the end of the bar next to Cliff and Paul, and he just would have been down to their level, and he talking about the former basketball great that's now just one of them.
Yeah, he fits in just as well as Harry the Hat.
yeah.
Like, oh yeah, that guy comes around every now and then. He's not here all the time, but when he is, something's going on.
Who was your MVP or your employee of the week?
My MVP was Lynn McHale.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. She's only got the 2 scenes.
So everything that I said exponentially more.
And my home run is the moment where they're in bed and she knows it's the guys from Cheers, and she rips the phone cord from the wall. Just, oh, the speed at which she does it is amazing. Just no hesitation. Nothing. No. We're not doing this tonight, Kevin. And then when we see her again, she's like the anti-Vera. She shows up. Kevin's going home now.
Yes. Which, the play on it for him being this, like, physically dominating professional athlete and the kind of, you know, masculinity we sort of associate with that. The wife walks in and he sheepishly runs out the door. And it's just,
she's in charge.
They did that so well. They got away with it twice and they did it perfectly. So that's a good call. Yeah. For my home runs, my runner up would be Phil signing the Red Sox ball. And it, like, how many G's and Boggs? And so it's like 2. He's like, is that all? It doesn't look right. but the best one, who would eat who in the Brady Bunch, and Woody's line, they probably eat the maid first because she ain't kin.
Yeah, Woody, you would know, man.
Yeah. Oh, Langston, thank you very much for coming back on Cheers Cast. Had a blast talking to you again. Where else can our listeners find you if they want to hear more from you or see more from you?
If they want to hear more, you can always check out wrbh.org. There's always great things happening there. And if you want to see this face made for radio and happen for me, I have a film that's going to the North Hollywood Cinefest later this month, so August of 2026, whenever you happen to listen to this. Maybe that's different. And as always, you can search for me on any streaming service and check out some movies that I happen to be in.
Thank you very much. Great talking to you again. And thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
You guys should be ashamed of yourselves. You're like vampires. Big-butted, do-nothing vampires. And now you're trying to make Kevin one of your recruits. Well, I say it's got to stop. I'm not going to let you screw up his career.
Oh, come on, lighten up, will you? It's just Kevin's getting a little carried away with bolts, that's all.
Yeah, sure, Sammy. Today, it's how many bolts are in the floor. Tomorrow, they'll have them on to, if the Brady Bunch crashes in the Andes, who's going to eat who first?
Well, they'd probably eat the maid, because she ain't kin.
Well, you know, but if they're smart, they'll ask her first how she should best prepare herself.